Blog Talk Radio.
All right, fans, here we go. 4 2-minute rounds of boxing scheduled. Women's in the ring.
Greetings, fight fans. Here we are again, another episode of the 2-Minute Round, your hooks and jabs look at the female fight world. I am your co-host, Felipe Leon, and as well with me, like always, no introduction needed for Mr. David Avila. How you doing, David Avila?
Fine, thank you. Hi, everybody.
And as well, you know, we always save the best for last, but we have Mrs. Elena Baby Doll Reed with us as well. How you doing, Elena?
I'm doing great. Very happy to be here tonight.
Great. We're happy to have you. How's the weather out there in Phoenix, Arizona? Getting hot already, or still you got a little bit of spring left?
You know, it's been in the hundreds, so it's been hot. But yesterday we had a little bit of a storm, so it was a little bit of a pleasant surprise. But I think we were just in the 90s maybe yesterday.
Well, there you go, your meteorological report from Arizona from Baby Doll Reed. Not only do we give you boxing news, but we give you weather updates as well. Well,
anything you need.
Thank you. If you're listening, feel free to give us a call here at the 2-Minute Round. The number to call is 347-683-9181. Again, 347-683-9181. Oh, I'm sorry, that's the wrong number. I don't even know where I got that number. The number is 347-215-7598. I think if you call that other number, you might get Pizza Hut or something like that. And unlike the rest of our previous show, this is the number 5 episode every other week here on the Leave It in the Ring network of David Duenas. There isn't a lot of action coming up or in the past, but we are going to have an interview today with Mr. Brian Cohen of the East Coast, manager of a number of female fighters out there in the East Coast. But the theme of the conversation that we're going to have in about 15 minutes with him is going to be their experience at that New Zealand show out there in two or three weeks ago, that went down in New Zealand, where we had Kelly Reese fight Maricela Cornejo. We had Mia St. John's possibly his last fight, but it looked like there were some irregularities there, and he kind of gave us a little of a preview on the last show, if you guys caught it at the very end, and that's why we decided to have him on this time to give us a little bit more information of what went down. But before we have Mr. Brian Cohen on, why don't we go into the past fight results, starting with Saturday, May 7th, from Buenos Aires, Argentina, quite possibly considered one of the best female fighters that's ever lived, in my opinion. I don't know how you feel about it, David and Elena. Maricela da Tigresa Acuña defeated Mayra Alejandra Gomez via unanimous decision for the interim WBA featherweight title. Scores were a dominating 100-92 times in 99-91. Mayra Alejandra Gomez, if you guys remember, the last time that we've heard of her in a big fight, she actually faced Jackie Nava in Jackie Nava's last fight back in February here in Rosarito/Tijuana, and now she's back in her home country of Argentina facing, you know, the great Tigresa Acuña. What can you tell me about Acuña, David? What do you feel about her in the boxing panorama, in the female boxing panorama? I think she's a great fighter.
To me, she just exemplifies strength. She just seems strong. And, you know, every time I see her, I expect her to just out-muscle everybody. And, you know, she has skills, of course, but she just seems so strong. Like, nothing can hurt her.
Yeah, she's defeated. I mean, she defeated Jackie Nava. She defeated her countrywoman, Olivares, the freight train, who is also a very, very strong woman. We've spoken to her about her in the past. But this Maricela Tigresa Acuña I agree with you. She's very strong. And I think that if you go on YouTube and search for her, there's a really, really good documentary on her. I think it's in Spanish, but I think it's subtitled if you guys want to check it out. on Marcela Tigresa Acuña. It's a really good documentary on her on YouTube. Any thoughts on that fighter, baby doll? May I call you baby doll, or do I have to go Elena?
I'm pretty used to baby doll, but whatever you're comfortable with is good with me. As long as you say it nicely, right?
Okay. With respect.
So where,
with respect.
Where is she living now? Exactly.
She's in Argentina. She's in Argentina.
No, I think you guys have said it all. She does have that boxing. You can't really compare anyone to her strength right now. So, you know, I'm excited to see her progress as a boxer as well.
And I think she's getting a little bit up there in age. I think she's close to 40 years old, right? She's actually 39 years old. She's going to be 40 this year in October. She's a veteran of, you know, over 50 fights or near, 50 fights,
wow,
actually, right on the number. So you know, I think we have.
She took some time off.
Yeah, she took some time off. You know, she took 2 years off. Actually, this was her first fight since 2014 when she defeated Edith Matisse, the sister, Soledad Matisse, the sister of Lucas Matisse, via unanimous decision. But, I mean, she's a great fighter, and I hope we do get to see a little bit more of her and actually see some video. I tried to look for the video of her, but I couldn't find it. On the next week after that, on Saturday, May 14th, back in Buenos Aires, I'm telling you, Argentina is, I think a couple years ago, if not last year, was named like the most busiest female fight country in the world. So Argentina had another fight card where we had Adela Celeste del Carmen Peralta. You thought Mexicans had long names. Look at this name. Adela Celeste del Carmen Peralta defeated Marisela Gabriela Nunez. What's with these? Man, all these Argentinian women had like three names. Via unanimous decision for the IBF and WBO super lightweight title. The scores there were 98-90 and 97-91 two times. Nunez was down twice, once in the sixth and once in the tenth round. And, you know, what's funny about what I see here in the super lightweight division is that unlike the men, you know, the smaller female fighters, the junior flyweights, the super flyweights, even up to bantamweight, super bantamweight, get the more interest or more attention in the female fight world versus in the men's. It's the bigger guys. It's the welterweights, the super welterweights, the middleweights. So, you know, for these super lightweights to fight for titles, I mean, they get to fight for titles a lot quicker than the smaller women, don't you think? Especially, Elena, your opinion, since you, when you were fighting, you were a flyweight.
You know, I didn't see such a difference. I think I have to look, but I just feel like there's more of a pull at the lighter weight, so... Maybe it's easier to fight, is what you're saying. It's easier to fight for titles if you're a little heavier as a female?
I think you get there quicker because there isn't that many female fighters, I think, in that size that are out there fighting.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
like Marisela Cornejo. Yeah. Like Marisela Cornejo, our host, our guest last week, I mean, she's only has five or six fights and she was already fighting for a middleweight world title. Same thing with Alejandra Jimenez, who in their fifth or sixth fight won the heavyweight title, versus the men who, at the heavier weight classes, there's more competition. Where at junior flyweight, maybe strawweight, with 15, 18 fights, they get to fight for a world title in the men's side of the sport.
There's also a lot
more
money behind heavyweights as men, so you know it's kind of a bigger deal, I think, for the heavier weight.
I think money
always has to come into play, right?
Yeah. Do you think that you know, obviously women are, you know, the majority of women, I don't want to categorize, but I mean, if you just kind of, I would have to research it, but the majority of women are kind of the smaller size, weighing anywhere from 100 to 125, perhaps 130 pounds versus, you know, when you start getting above that, and being in shape, genetically, it's a lot harder to be that big as a woman. So I also believe that you know, that might be the case where there's actually a more of a talent pool in the smaller weight classes in the female fight world.
I guess it'd be tough without, like, doing all the research to try to say, but, yeah, as a small woman, I notice a lot of other women my size. So I do notice maybe women, like you said, you know, bantamweights, featherweights are more drawn to the gym. to the boxing gym. You know, there's other sports for women, too. Maybe the bigger women are going into basketball or softball and those other sports. But there does seem to be a larger pool of smaller-sized women in boxing.
Good point.
Yes,
that's
I
a good point.
I did research it, and there's a vast difference between the girls below 130 to the girls above 150. I mean, just it's like 50 times
I can't even, yeah, I can't even think of that many women. Even in MMA, you know, your most popular weight class is 135, you know, and then there is
exactly.
smaller women in the UFC. I don't know if they go too high above that. So I think in all of fighting, whether it's kickboxing, there is just a larger pool. And here I go again without research. And so, you know, we are in front of people, but I will say there is a large Hispanic population, a large Asian population when it comes to fighting, and we do tend to be of smaller size.
Sure, that is true. Now we go the same day on May 14th on the Saturday, but from Mexico City, Mexico. And it is a smaller woman. It was veteran Mariana Barbie Juarez defending her WBC International Super Flyweight title for the seventh time, this time with a unanimous decision over Japan's Tamao Ozawa. Scores were 100 to 93 times, a completely dominating performance by Mariana La Barbie Juarez, 36 years old. What did you see in this fight, David?
Yes, it was complete domination. She just had too much skill for the Japanese fighter. The only thing that I did notice, though, is that her power wasn't there. She was dominating her and hitting her at will almost, but that power that she used to have, I think she's been down at that weight too long, and now that she's older, she needs to go up in weight. And she just seemed a little weaker, even though she was very skillful and didn't seem to tire. But, you know, sometimes you're losing that weight just takes away from you. As probably Elena could tell you better than me.
Mm-hmm.
And she is planning, actually, I think, to go up in weight, isn't she? And to get
yeah.
the title at the next weight class is her plan, I believe.
Yeah, we'll discuss that. We'll discuss that in the female fight chatter. We'll go a little bit more in depth into her decision to move up in weight. Looking at your record, Elena, it looks like you kind of started a little bit heavier in the super bantamweight division, and then gradually moved yourself down to flyweight. Was that because you were losing weight, or is that because that's where you were finding the opportunities at a heavier weight classes?
I wish I was losing weight ever, but it was, you know, all the people in my whole career always said when I fought for titles, they'd be at 112. I'm 5'3¼", so I'm not that tall. And so that 112 was kind of a perfect weight class for me. And they always said, as a female, they told me, you might not be, you know, very womanly at 112, but as a boxer, like, that's where you're going to box. And so I did drop down to 112. And my pro career, really, at the beginning of it, was my amateur career. So we weren't losing that much weight to begin with. It was kind of more where I walked around.
Mm.
And so that's really the reason behind that.
So did you find your power diminish or increase as you went down? Because it looks like you scored a TKO in your third fight, which was at a 118. But maybe as you moved down, you didn't have the same power as you had in the beginning of your career? Or how did you see that?
I don't have to say. I would imagine I didn't hit as hard as 112 as, you know, having some more weight behind it. But to be honest with you, as a boxer, you know, I know my faults, and I never really learned how to sit down off punches. I never had that killer instinct, which was really tough for me. As a boxer, I had to say, I better hurt before they hurt me versus having that killer, like, I want to hurt them. So I just never had learned to have that mentality. I never really learned to sit down and go for the knockout, I guess. And that's just my personality. But, yeah, of course, how could you not say? I'm sure from, you know, fighting at 112, there is less of me to punch, you know, less of weight to punch behind a punch versus at 118. I mean, I think that just makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Well, on the same night that Mariana Juarez was defeating Tamao Ozawa in Reynosa, Mexico, former WBC bantamweight champion Jasmine La Rosita Rivas suffered yet another cut over her left eye to end her bout against Venezuelan Ana Maria Lozano in a technical draw. the bout was for the interim WBC bantamweight title. I don't know if you guys got a chance to see it on social media, the cut. It was a horrible cut. I mean, one of the worst cuts I ever seen. And then actually Sanford on their Facebook page actually released a video of her being stitched up. I don't know why they would do that. As soon as I saw that what they were doing, I shut it off. I didn't want to see her get stitched up. But it was a horrible fight. And I can tell you that I was at her previous fight, the one in January here at the female fight convention in Tijuana, the female fighter convention, WBC, where she was, you know, she suffered a cut and she ended up losing her title there. And so it looks like, I mean, this cut was a little bit on top of that. You could actually see in the picture the scar of her previous cut, which was right on her, under her brow. And this one was over her brow, but this was, you know, five times as big as the last cut. So we'll see how long she's going to be out. I mean, I'm guessing she's going to be out for, you know, 3, 4, 5 months at least. Don't you think, David? I don't know if you got a chance to see that cut.
No, I didn't get to see the cut, but I can imagine that's a pretty bad area to get a cut. Very bad.
And
Linda,
yeah,
did you ever get a cut there?
Yeah, I got a few. probably nothing to that extent, but no, I definitely got a couple of them on my left eye, right, you know, near the brow. And you're right, it'll take at least like 3 months, because, you know, it takes about 6 weeks to heal, and then you got to imagine you have to, you know, get back to, you do get more and more scars, you have that scar tissue, so it's going to be easier to get cut. So she's going to really need to take that time off to heal.
That's right. And I can see that our guest host, Mr. Brian Cohen, is on the line. He's on hold. I'm just going to quickly give you the last results so that we could get this out of the way. From Lutherville, Maryland, Tyresha Douglas continues her ascent through the ranks with the unanimous decision over 8 rounds over the much more experienced Anaí Torres of Mexico City at flyweight. The reason I mentioned the weight is because Tyresha Douglas has been fighting anywhere from flyweight to bantamweight. Scores were 80-72 two times and 78-74. I have not had the opportunity to look at YouTube and see if I can find a video of Tyresha Douglas. But it looks like she's a good fighter. She actually challenged for an IBF title in Argentina, which she lost, which a lot of people saw her win. And being, like we mentioned before, that to go to Argentina and win a fight, it's pretty complicated if you're not from that country. But I think we're going to do a little bit of research on this Tyresha Douglas, because it looks like she's moving up on the rankings. I think she's ranked in the top 10, if not pretty close, in all the sanctioning bodies. So I think this is a fighter that we need to keep an eye on.
Definitely.
All righty. So with that said, that ends the fight results of this, the number five episode of the 2-Minute Round. And we do have our guest on the line. We're going to bring him on, Mr. Brian Cohen. Let's bring him on. Hello, Brian, are you there?
Yes, I am. How's everybody doing tonight?
Good. How are you doing, Brian?
Good, Brian.
Thank you for joining us here on the 2-Minute Round, your Fights and Hooks look at the female fight world. And you called us our last show, which was a couple of weeks ago, and you kind of gave us a little bit of a preview of what went down out there in New Zealand at that fight card held on April, I think it was April 16th in New Zealand. Why don't you kind of start it off with, how did you get contacted and how many actual fighters did you take down there for that card?
I was contacted by the promoter. She inboxed me, a lady by the name of Lisa Lewis, and she inboxed me probably 6 months prior to this fight even taking place. And, you know, I tried to help her, tried to guide her along the way, because I knew she was, like, a first-time promoter. And, you know, the way she was putting this card together, in my mind, I'm saying to myself that this is going to cost about $100,000, the way she was doing everything with the airline tickets, the sanctioning fees, and things like that. And I couldn't imagine how somebody can afford this. I had Ronica Jeffrey on the card to fight for the WBC featherweight. I had Melissa St. Ville on the card to fight for the WBC super featherweight, and Nydia Feliciano to fight for the UBF international title. So I had those fighters there. And, you know, of course, you had Callie Reese fighting Maricela. And, you know, they had a few other local fighters as well. And you also had Naomi Boss fighting. boss case fight on the card. It was an experience, to say the least. I understand she was a first time promoter. Several boxers didn't get paid. Everybody's still waiting for their money. It was horrible, horrible. I've been involved in boxing since I was 8 years old, and I never experienced anything like this in my entire life. It's terrible, terrible.
So what have been some of the interactions that you had with the promoter as far as the payment? You said that some of the fighters have not been paid. Some of the fighters that you took over have not been paid, and some have, or what is the...
Jian Tan Lupi, the one that fought Ronica, didn't get paid. Rebecca Jennings, the girl that fought Nydia, didn't get paid. Ronica didn't get paid. Melissa didn't get paid. Callie Reese didn't get paid. Nydia Feliciano didn't get paid. The judges didn't get paid. The round card girls didn't get paid. I mean, it's unbelievable. So I have... actually have the WBC involved, and their legal team is looking into it. I have legal proceedings going on in New Zealand with the other managers involved, and it's a headache. I mean, I'm glad for the girls. They went down there, they won titles, but at the end of the day, and I don't want to steal Floyd's line, it's prize fighting. You know what I mean? It's, you know, yeah, you left with some belts, but you know, when the landlord knocks on your door at the end of the month and looks for his money, you can't hand him a green belt, unfortunately.
Yeah. No,
so,
it's your livelihood. I mean, you spend 3 months or whatever you do, that's all you do is you train, you know. So all those hours that you're putting in is what you expect to get paid for. And so I can't imagine, you know, especially as a fighter, like you really count on that money to pay for the bills that you've already, you know, used to train and other things. So that, I mean, that literally could really ruin someone financially not to get paid after a fight, even if it's not, you know, $1 million.
No, absolutely. And you have to figure, it's people's time away from their family. People's, you know, they're sacrificing, they're taking off time of work. I mean, we went down there and we weren't even given our per diem money. We were due like $100 a day per fighter for per diem. So I had to, I paid for everything. Of course, you know, I felt responsible. I took them down there. So, you know, I actually cooked for everybody the whole time we were there because we had an apartment. And, you know, I made sure that they were taken care of. It was just, you know, all the events leading up to the fight, I would never expected for somebody not to pay like that. You know, I would have thought the WBC would have required a bond, them to have a bond or something. And,
leading up to it, and you saw that you weren't receiving your per diem. This is my last question before I pass you on to David. Did you have any conversations with the promoter saying, "Hey, where's the per diem? Are you, what's going on? You know, this doesn't look right. You know, what was going on? Did you try to have a conversation with her prior to the actual fight card while you were there?"
You know, certain people, and I don't want to bash her or anything. I think she has a severe personality disorder, and that's not even me trying to be funny. I think she's, like, tripolar. You know, I tried to contact her. She's training for a fight. I tried to contact her. She's doing promotional things. I tried to contact her, and unfortunately, she's at her other job, which, you know, if you go online, you'll see she's an escort. So it was really tough trying to get a hold of her in between her jobs. That's what we had to deal with.
So, Brian, what are your options? I know you said you contacted the WBC. What have they told you in response to what you told them?
You know, Mauricio Suleiman, he was gracious enough. He emailed me. He said they're going to put their legal team on it. But, you know, in New Zealand, it's a totally different court system. You have to go to tribal court in New Zealand. So I actually have a lawyer in New Zealand that I'm dealing with that, you know, the most I can do is basically bankrupt her. There's really no other way to get the money unless, you know, she wants to do a payment plan. And I know she contacted one fighter that she wanted to pay him like $888 a month for the next 6 months or some kind of crazy number. I mean, in total, she owes people, just the fighters in general, it's $32,000 some odd dollars. I don't see how she's going to come up with it. Yeah, it's terrible.
Well, so she was just over her head.
Yeah.
I'm sorry? Yeah, way over her way over her head.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And looking at BoxRec, it looks like she has another event scheduled for the end of the year in December. So, you know, is there any way that, you know, that could be stopped before that and get payment before she goes through with it?
The New Zealand Professional Boxing Association has assured me that they're not going to let her throw another event until everything is paid. And that came from the head of the NZPA. So I'm taking their word for it, but again, I'm here, they're there, so I'm assuming they're honoring their word. So it's just a terrible situation, you know.
Yeah, real cautionary tale there.
Yeah, horrible.
So what do you guys do? It's nothing but horrible, and I understand you guys are going through the procedure of trying to get the money back, but what do you guys do from here on out, like, to make sure that this doesn't happen again? Like, to tell someone else, like, what do you, because it's never happened to me, thank God, but I did see it happen to other people here in Arizona. Like, what do you do to make sure that you're going to get paid for your fight?
Well, you know what, that's an excellent question, actually. Melissa St. Ville, I just signed a fight for her to fight Katie Castillo in China. I want the money wired to my account prior to us even getting on the airplane. That's how I'm going to do things from now on going overseas, because, we're fighting. It's Manny Pacquiao's promotion, but I don't, you know, I'm not familiar with how many times he's promoted shows in China. Yeah. So, before I even get on the airplane, I want the money wired here. And there was a couple other stipulations that I put in the contract in regards to the gloves. I mean, we went out, the gloves that we fought in, I could go to Modell's or a sporting goods store and get better gloves. I mean, these things were terrible. So now I request
own gloves.
Yeah, certain gloves. If not, I'll bring my own, you know.
What about here in the States? And I know, right, it's state to state, but don't we require bonds here in the States? Or is that, again, just a state to state?
Every state by state. Like in California, the fight card will not start until the promoter hands over the checks for each fighter that's fighting to the commission. Then the commission actually pays out the fighter as soon as they get off the ring. But every state is different. That I think is the best way to ensure. I mean, you got to make sure you can write a check and it might not have any funds in the bank, but then you will deal with that at that point. And then that's when the promoter's license gets in question and all that. But at least the fighter's going to walk out with the check in his hand at the end of his fight. So, and that's something that obviously, did that happen in New Zealand, Brian, or they didn't even bother to give you a check?
Well, they didn't even fake it. They didn't even think giving us a check. You know, they could have faked it, and I would have probably been happy if they would have faked it. I would have been satisfied, but no, they didn't even try to fake it. She said she was coming. There was some sort of after party. She said she was going to set up with everybody at the after party, and you know, she was gone. She was gone. You know, so.
Now, Brian, why don't you give us a rundown of the fighters that you have under contract, and then kind of give us a little update of what's next for them.
I have Alicia Napoleon. Of course, she's a WBC silver 154-pound champion. She's actually fighting June 3rd in New York City. We're actually in negotiations. She's supposed to sign a promotional contract with Lou DiBella, DiBella Entertainment.
So who has been doing – I've seen her name plenty of times in the schedule. Who has been doing her fights out there? I know she's been fighting quite often in Queens.
I actually matchmake all my fighters' fights, to be quite honest with you, because it's just the lack of knowledge of the promoters. To get them on the cards, I try to take the grunt work out of the matchmakers and the promoters, and I try to just help them. And you can see I match my girls tough. I mean, with the exception of the New Zealand fights, originally that whole card was supposed to be New Zealand versus the United States. We were fighting what we could ever fight over there. But you know, Alicia, she fights in Queens. That's actually a guy by the name of Ronson Frank. His promotion is Uprising Promotions, and he actually does put a lot of girls on his card. He usually puts about two girls a show on his card. But again, you know, Alicia, she'll be signing with DiBella probably after this fight. Well, she actually has one more fight obligated to Ronson Frank. So she's going to fight June 3rd in the casino, in the Resorts Casino in Queens. And then she'll be fighting again for Ronson Frank on July 15th at a place called La Marina in New York. I have Melissa St. Ville. Melissa St. Ville, we're actually supposed to be fighting in, I want to say it's Kentucky. Nate Tubbs is doing a show. So she's going to fight on the 25th of June, and then we're going to go to China on, she has a fight July 9th. And she's going to be defending her WBC silver title against Katie Castile. And when we get back from there, me and Melissa were supposed to go to Haiti. She's supposed to fight in Haiti in the same month. So we'll see if the Haiti thing shakes out, but everything else is – all the other fights are pretty much signed. Let me see. Who else? Ronica Jeffrey, she's going to fight on the same card as Melissa in Kentucky on June 25th. And then I have a date on Star Boxing at the Mohegan Sun. I'm just not positive with the date, but – I got verbal confirmation from the matchmaker that she'll be fighting at the Mohegan Sun. Keisha McLeod Wells, she's going to be fighting Melissa McMorrow in June. I think the date is June 18th.
So yeah. she's been out of action for a little bit, Melissa McLeod.
Keisha, yeah, she's been out of
Keisha,
action.
Yeah, Keisha, I'm sorry.
It's actually, you know, these girls, they have to sell tickets to get on cards. You know, there's not enough small promoters in New York for her to get on the cards. You know what I mean? I mean, when she'll sell a good 7,500 in tickets, which is a good number, but I have Alicia who will on a bad night sell 12,500. So they're going to pick Alicia. Yeah, yeah. She's a juggernaut. When it comes to selling tickets,
I'll say,
exactly. I mean, on the last card, I think she sold 16,000.
Wow,
and you
that's
have,
pretty good.
Yeah, you have Keisha facing Melissa McMorrow in June. I think it's in June where she's supposed to fight out here in the Bay Area. Correct.
Correct. That's correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Carla, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
No, Carla Torres, you know, she lives in Cleveland. There is no fights going on in Cleveland in the Ohio area. So we were supposed to fight, actually, Shalito Vincent quite a few times, and for whatever reason the fight was pulled. We were going to fight Cindy Serrano. Something happened with that. She's difficult to match. She's difficult to match because, yes, she doesn't have a lot of fights, but she's a spoiler, Carla. You know, she beat my fighter. She beat Ronica Jeffrey. I mean, she's a good little fighter. She's a young, good fighter, hungry fighter. It's just, you know, given her location, just really hard to match.
Wasn't she in Vegas for a little while?
She was in Vegas. She was... She was working, if I'm not mistaken, she was working with Luis Tapia.
That's what I thought. Yeah, I thought she was working there.
Yeah, I don't know what happened with that, to be honest with you.
Now, Brian, looking at your roster, obviously the majority of it is female fighters. What made you concentrate on female fighters?
You know, my first female fighter that I managed actually was Melissa Hernandez, believe it or not. I was promoting a card in Philadelphia, and she came down with Belinda. Belinda was fighting a girl from Philadelphia, Lakeisha Williams. And I met Melissa. I told her I can get her fights. And, I managed her. I managed Melissa for 2 years, and then ever since then, everything kind of snowballed. A lot of the female fighters in New York feel comfortable with me. you know, it's female boxing, but I do work hard for them. You know, there's some I have that are not even on the list, and there's some guys I have that are not even on the list. But I enjoy it. I feel that the females don't get a fair shake. I feel that they don't make enough money. I feel that they put on better fights than guys 9 times out of 10. I enjoy watching them fight. I mean, I think they're highly talented, and I think as talented as they are, as much as they don't get the respect that they deserve. They don't get the purses they deserve. I think it's terrible that the way that they're treated by promoters and television. So I'm just trying to, you know, listen, if I can make somebody's dream come true and they can say I was a world champion, I'm happy. You know, I'm not putting $1 million in my pocket, but I sleep better at night. So that's how I feel.
I have a question. You know, I try to ask everyone this because, you know, I'd like to see it happen. Do you have a recipe for how, like, you know, we can promote women and how you think it would happen for women to make more of a name and to make more money? Or do you think that just rests solely on the shoulders of the promoters out there?
No, I would say it does, unfortunately, it does lie on the promoters because, you know, certain promoters, you know, be it religious beliefs or whatnot, won't put females on cards. And it's a shame because, you know, I've seen female fighters steal cards. Like, I'm going to give you an example. You know, Amir Mansour, you know, he's a heavyweight. What's this kid's name? Douglas out of a lot of these guys were signed to Al Haymon, and Ronica Jeffrey was fighting on the same card as they were, and she was winning Fighter of the Night. So
she's a great fighter.
You know, so what does that tell you about female? I just don't think that they're given a fair shake. I mean, in anything.
Well,
I think
it's just business-wise it makes sense, right? We see it in other promotions. Like, women, like, do sell tickets. You have women that sell tickets. Like, they are popular. Like, U.S. does accept them. So, that's why I try to ask. You know, maybe someone has an answer. Like, what is it that we do? Like, how do we break that ceiling? And, I mean, too bad. But I guess we just have to, you know, maybe one day be a promoter ourselves or, you know, to help some promoter out there who does have that vision.
Well, I think one way Brian is doing it the right way because not only does his fighters sell tickets, but he's also taking the grunt work away from the promoter. The one thing that a promoter that I've heard and I've seen is that, you know, it's very, very tough to find opponents for female fighters. I mean, because you know, some of them don't want to fight, you know, certain fighters or they're trying to build certain fighters and things like that. But when Brian takes it upon himself to match his fight and says, hey, not only am I going to sell you $16,000 worth of tickets, but I'm going to find the opponent, you know, the promoter says, well, you know, okay, go ahead, you know. And I think that has a lot to do with it also that – for the time being, you got to try to make it easier for that promoter who might be hesitant to put on a female on his fight card, make it easier for them to take it on the card.
Well, he has the knowledge, right? Because the thing is, every fighter is tough to match, really. There's more guys, so there's more of a pool. But I just think the promoters out there right now, they're not educated. They don't know all the women out there because there is women out there. And maybe Brian does because he's promoting him, he's watching him, he's paying attention, so he does have the contacts to make those.
It's so funny. I look at everything. I look at posts on Facebook. Oh, need a fighter, and I snap. You know, and I take a picture of that post and I save everything. And you know, it actually happened today. I actually used one of the posts that I seen like a month ago, and I got an opponent for one of my fighters. So you know, I do. Like I said, I don't even look for the fighter. I book the fighters' medicals. I'll book the airline tickets. I do everything for the promoter. So it's like you get like a little second matchmaker in me. Yeah, I do everything because I don't want to hear that they're hassled, that they're there. Listen, I even bring pregnancy tests to the weigh-in just in case they were forgotten. Like, you know, I don't want no problems. I want them to say that we're easy to work with and we have, you know, we're able to get back on the card. I mean, that's, you know.
You're prepared. That sounds great.
Yeah,
anything can happen.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And I, like I said, I just try to make everything easier, and you know, I don't try to get headaches, and I don't like dealing with divas. I mean, unfortunately, there's some divas out there. I think you had one on the show the last time. But
do you manage Kali Reese? I mean, I don't see her on her stable, but you say you had some that are not on your on the list here.
I love Kali. I've known Kali for years. You know, I worked her corner in New Zealand. You know, no, I don't manage her. Does she call me for advice every now and then? Do we talk on the back channels? Yeah, we do. You know, that fight that she fought, I don't know where those scores were. I don't know what a lot of the judges were looking at, but she clearly won that fight. Clearly.
Yeah.
You know, so.
All right. Any more questions, Dave and Elena, for Mr. Brian Cohen?
I could spend hours probably asking you questions, but I guess, you know, because we're on a show, is there anything that you want to say or, you know, you want to make sure that people out there know about the women's boxing?
I just want to make, you know, if you are, you know, a woman trying to make it in the sport, just be careful who you surround yourself with, and, you know, who you let guide your career and, you know, who you let train you, because a lot of people do have ulterior motives too. You know what I mean? I see it 1,000 times, and you know, it's happened to some of my fighters. Just be careful and have an open mind and, you know, be conscious of what's going on around you. You know, make sure you're not being used. That's what I would say, you know, most importantly. And you're a female, and, you know, you should treat yourself with some respect. That's basically what I would say.
All right.
No, thank you so much. Yeah, great job.
Well,
okay.
Thank you, Brian, giving us a little bit of your time and giving us a little bit of the insight of what happened down there in New Zealand. And keep us posted on that story. If there's any developments, feel free to contact us, and we'll have you back on, and you can give us the latest of what went on and if the WBC was actually able to help you with those purses.
I will. I just want to say you guys are doing a great job. I think it's great that you guys have this forum to talk. And, you know, I wish you guys many blessings and success. And I hope it goes really, really well for you guys as well.
Thank you.
And here on the show, let's give you an open invitation to, when Keisha gets a little bit closer to that fight with Melissa, we'll have her on and speak to her, and she can give us her thoughts on that upcoming fight. So we'll be in contact to set up that interview.
Okay. Excellent. Okay. You guys have a good night, and, you know, keep up the good work.
Thank you, Brian. Have a great night.
All right. Bye-bye.
Take care.
Bye-bye. And well, there you have it, folks. Brian Cohen, manager of a number of fighters, including Alicia Napoleon, who we've spoken about here on the show, Melissa St. Ville, Nydia Feliciano, Carla Torres, Ronica Jeffrey, Keisha McLeod Wells, which I'm happy to hear that she's coming back. She's been out of the loop for a little bit, so that's going to be a good fight against
Melissa McMorrow.
So. We have him here on the show. He gives us a bit of insight. Hopefully he keeps us posted on that. But now, next on our show, we have what you all been waiting for, what we've been talking about for a couple of shows. Elena Baby Dolls Reed, former fighter, her take on why female fighters should have a 3-minute round versus a 2-minute round. Elena, the floor is yours.
Thank you. Well, my take on it is I don't understand it. I don't understand why women today, because there is such a large amateur pool of women that are going into professional boxing, like I want someone to explain to me why we would have a different time. Like, women run just as much. We train the same amount of time in the gym. I mean, there is a difference between men and women, like, obviously, our body parts are different, and men have more testosterone, but that's pretty much, you know, the difference. And so when we only have 2-minute rounds, which is an amateur, right? Amateur fights are 2-minute rounds. I believe women are forced to fight more amateurish. You don't have that extra minute to set things up to box. when I was in David, the story he's written about me talking, when I started, I was a slugger. Those 2 minutes were perfect for me, right? Just go hard, throw as many punches as I can, and hope for the best. And that's, you know, an amateur way of thinking. And so it worked. As I progressed as a boxer and I learned how to set things up, I learned how to use that jab, how to use the ring and move around and, you know, play that chess game, I didn't have that third minute. And so in practice, it was great. Like, I could really box, but when you get into the fight, it doesn't always translate. And as you can see my record, I do have a lot of draws. And it just doesn't add up to me. I don't think it's fair. I don't understand it. Is it just a money thing? Or do people literally think that women can't fight 3 minutes? Because that's just kind of ridiculous to me. Because every gym out there in the whole world, women are training those 3 minute rounds just along with the men. So I don't know, maybe one of you could tell me what other people think or why we would keep it at 2 minutes. I just don't get it.
Well, it's funny you should ask, Elena, because I've actually gone on the internet and did a little bit of research, and I want to play devil's advocate here and give you the reasons of why at least the WBC would not consider going past 10 rounds or going to the 3 minute round. I contacted the WBC and asked them for more in-depth literature, but they couldn't get it to me on time for the show. But what I did find, and this was a report that was shared at the first WBC female fight convention that was held in Playa del Carmen, Mexico, in 2014, September 2014, which I was present. And this, and then actually in the last one, which was last January, they actually went into even more in depth, and they had a doctor there, but and that's the literature that I was looking for, but they weren't able to give it to me on time for the show, and hopefully we could get it for our next show so we could kind of explain it a little bit more. But as far as what they said at the first convention, they said that, and this is medical research, that women are physically inclined to have concussions much more than men. So that is a reason why they wouldn't want to go to 3 minutes, because they could receive more punches. Also, it states a female fighter used to fighting 10 two-minute rounds, which is 20 minutes, would need tremendous effort to adjust to 12 three-minute rounds, which is 36 minutes. I think that is a little bit of baloney there, because, I mean, like you say, and I've seen it, that a lot of the female fighters, they actually train three-minute rounds, even four-minute rounds I've seen in the boxing gyms. So that, as far as the conditioning, I don't think that would be an issue of getting used to fighting 36 minutes instead of 20 minutes. This one I have no knowledge of or no prior knowledge, but it says menstrual cycle has tremendous impact on the body of a woman, including 12 hormones which act in the body system, creating radical changes in several areas. So I don't know whether that has to do with 2 minute or 3 minute rounds. The woman's endurance has been.
It sounds like a bunch of BS to me. To be honest with you.
Well, they medically. I mean, that one does sound like BS, and the 36 minute the conditioning one does too. But this one kind of makes a point. It says women's endurance has been proven to be less than men. Marathon running time is much different between male and females, and that is true. A man, well conditioned, you know, world class runner is going to run a marathon faster than the same world-class.
But the women are still making the marathon, though. They're still running the whole marathon just because it's not as fast. So, okay, you can tell me, right, most men in general are going to be faster athletes, right, than women. But that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about endurance. The women still endure the whole race. They still make it, right?
Mm-hmm. No, I think the biggest point here, and if it is true, is that if women are physically more inclined to have concussions, then that's something that we must consider, obviously.
Let me go ahead and say this, though, too, because I would love to study more into that, because I would like that to make sense to me. I'm not saying it's not true. I'm saying I don't know, but it is difficult for me to believe. And this is the thing, a two-minute or a three-minute round, that's what I'm talking about, an amateur fight. When you're fighting kids, you have to do a lot of punches. You have to be really offensive. If you have that 3 minutes, like, so it's just an extra minute to maybe get a concussion is why we don't do it. This just sounds really silly to me because it doesn't add up. Like, those things, there's a bunch of things you can say to me, and you know, person to person, yes, in general, men have more testosterone, which makes them have more muscle mass, right? Mm-hmm. And yes, women do have periods, right? All women have periods. Not every fight did I have my period, though. So, and I always fought through it. It's even some fights, as a female, sometimes I didn't have my period because I was so low in body fat. I was still very healthy. So, I mean, there's so many things that you can say to me, but I just need them to make sense, and it still doesn't make any sense to me. So I will do more research, right?
Yeah.
And look
up the concussion thing,
because why would that be?
Yeah, and I think that's that is something that they did go more in depth in the last WBC female fight, the whole concussion theme of it, which I think is the most valid point of why not going to the 3-minute round, in my opinion. The other stuff, the endurance stuff, I agree with you wholeheartedly. The menstrual cycle, I don't know anything about it. I never had one, so I wouldn't be able to tell you. But the concussion thing, if they are prone and if they could medically prove that women, for whatever reason, if they're receiving, punches to the head, are more prone to get a concussion than a man, then that's something I think that should be considered.
But, yeah, can you make sense of that? Because I can't make sense of that. We both have, right, bone structure. We both have the same skull. Our brains all work the same. Yes, some of our hormones very differently. So why would we be more prone to have a concussion? Like I said, I am going to do research because I would like that to make sense to me. But even then women shouldn't be. Go ahead.
Go ahead, David.
Well, for one thing, this is boxing. It's the hurting sport.
Mm-hmm.
Knockout sell. Now, guys get knocked out all the time, so they can't say that girls get more concussed than a guy. Guys have more knockouts than girls, so why not just ban the whole sport if we're going that direction?
And then the other thing is
MMA girls go 5 minutes. So
what's
they're getting kicked, they're getting elbowed, nobody's stopping that. So I don't understand why one sport.
Go ahead, Elena.
When you have to worry about concussions, this is when you have to worry, and this is where we need to be more safe, man or woman. It's in practice. You get a concussion, and then you still go to your fight. That's when it's dangerous, right?
Right.
And you don't rest yourself, when you don't take care of it. So that's, I mean, we could just go on and on about this concussion thing, but you're right. We do have to be careful, male or female, for concussions, but really where you need to look at it, really where you need to be safe. And I'm saying this to all boxers, all athletes out there. If you get a concussion, you need to rest and take time off and not get hit in the head for a while. You need to go see your doctor. But when it gets to the fight, it's still, like I said, David, maybe you agree with me, maybe you don't, but it doesn't add up to me still.
Well, one thing that I wouldn't agree with going with the 3-minute round is that we would have to change the name of the show. So, you know. So I don't know if that's a good idea.
That makes sense.
But another point that David had in the past shows that we talked about is that, you know, that with the 3-minute round, it would give more opportunity for the female fighters to score more knockouts. But I was thinking about that today, David, and I think that if you have the power, you're going to knock somebody out in 2 minutes. And in the 2-minute round, you're going to, like Elena says, you have to throw more punches. You got to get started a lot quicker because you only have 2 minutes. So, yeah, you're going to get more knockouts, but I think they're going to be more knockouts because possibly they're going to get tired easier in the later rounds. Whereas with the 2-minute, if you knock somebody out within those 2 minutes, it's because you really have the power to knock them out.
Let me be devil's advocate here. Go ahead, David. You go first because I talk too much. Go ahead.
Well, that's true, but the 3 minutes, like Lena said earlier, you can set them up for a knockout. With 2 minutes,
that's
you're
what
just
I was say,
going
yeah.
to rapid. Yeah, you're going at rapid fire, but with 3 minutes, you can actually set up a fighter, set up traps, catch them coming in, things like that, and
watch
that's how you really get
yeah.
knockouts.
That's sure, the knockout. Let me say it to maybe where it makes more sense, right? So you think someone's like, banging, like real fast, you know, like 2 minutes, you're going as hard as you can. That person that you're going against is ready for that, right? So when boxing, you learn not every punch is going to be a hard punch. Sometimes you set things up, right? You lull them into that action. So you jab them right to the head and then to the body. And then you knock them out with that too. But it's, David, that's why I'm agreeing with you, and that's in my head, like, to set things up, that's the beauty of the sport. That's where the boxing science comes in, that it's all about setting things up, and you need that time to be able to do that, because it's not just you, but you're watching what your opponent does. If you're just forced to go bang, 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 you are hitting hard, but you're not always going to get a clean shot off, and that person's more ready for it.
Agreed.
That's a good point as well. Let's do a little bit of research. I'm going to try to contact the WBC again and see if we could get them to, if they have that literature as far as the concussion part of it, because I think that deserves a little bit more looking into. But with that said, Elena, it looks like our time has come to an end for at least today's show. Right on time, too. You got a prior engagement, so we're going to let you go. We thank you for being on the show, and we hope to have you on. Well, we know we're going to have you at the next one, and have a good time, and take care today.
Oh, thank you so much, guys. You have a wonderful night, and to all of you out there as well, and I will be speaking with you guys soon.
Okay, have a
all
good
righty.
Graduation party.
All right. Thank you. Have a good night.
And that was our co-host, Elena Baby Doll Reed, who has a prior engagement. So she's going to be going off the air, which leaves us with David Avila and myself, Felipe León, here on the 2-Minute Round, the number 5 episode on the Leave It in the Ring Network, your hooks and jabs look at the female boxing world. And if you want to give us a call and join us, we had a couple calls before while we had Brian on the line, so we weren't able to answer, and we apologize. If you want to give us a call back and give us your take on anything that we are talking about, call us at 347-215-7598, 347-215-7598, here at the 2-Minute Round, the hooks and jabs look on the female fight world. Let's go to the female fight chatter. There's a little bit of news down the pipe, David. It was announced this week that a new promotional company by the name of Blueprint Boxing Promotions has gone out, and they're out of the Bay Area of California, has gone out and signed former WBA bantamweight champion Kalisha West to an exclusive contract. And just last night, I received a press release that they actually have also signed Melissa McMorrow. So here we are. It's a new promotional company kind of making a little bit of waves in the female fight world, signing two world-class female fighters. And we'll see what happens. I mean, they didn't announce in these press releases that they sent out when their next fight will be. Obviously, Brian Cohen, in our interview with him, mentioned that Kalisha McLeod-Wells is scheduled to face Melissa McMorrow, a fight that we have heard about might be going down for the last couple of weeks. Now, we don't know if it's still going to go down with this new promotional company. We expect it would, because why would you take away an opportunity for Melissa McMorrow to get into the ring? But I don't know if you had a chance to read that that press release regarding Melissa McMorrow. And the part that I found interesting is that it says that she was the former WBO flyweight champion. Did you catch that, David?
No, I didn't. No, I didn't catch that. I know that she was out of action.
She has not defended the title.
Yes.
The title she won via a split decision over Tijuana's Kenny Enriquez. She won that title back at the end of February of 2015, and she has not seen any action since then and has not defended the title. I do know that Sanford Promotions, who was the promoter that put on that fight card in Rosarito, which had Jackie Nava in the main event, actually signed Melissa McMorrow to some options, but as far as I can see, they were never exercised. I think that they did try to make some fights and they fell through, but now obviously she's a free agent because she was able to sign with this new promotional company. And it did say on the press release, she's the former WBO female champion. Now, she was the WBO champion previously in defeating Kenny Enriquez, but I don't know if they have stripped her since for no defenses.
It probably was the case, but, you know, it's kind of sad because I'm sure Melissa would have wanted to defend that title.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sure she would have, you know, but sometimes things don't pan out, especially for female fighters, because, you know, like we all know and we all talked about, it's tough to get them fight. And actually, yes, I just went on the WBO website, and as far as their main rankings, their flyweight title is vacant.
Wow.
So she has been stripped of her title for not defending it. So there you go. Somewhat of breaking news here. Something that was not released, and we wouldn't have caught it if it wasn't for that press release. But as far as Kalisha West, in the press release, it stated that she's looking to come back in a major way. She's 28 years old. She's 16-2 with 3 draws and 4 knockouts. And by the looks of it, they're looking for they want to go big head hunting, David, where they mentioned that they would look for fights with Heather Hardy, Shelly Vincent, Maureen Shea, and Alicia Ashley, the big names at 122 pounds. So, you know, it looks like I've seen some videos of Kalisha on the social media where it looks like she's training pretty hard. And she has not fought since August of 2014, where she suffered a loss to featherweight Olivia Guerrula in Canada. The same Olivia Guerrula who lost in the first round against Amanda Serrano, correct?
Yes, it was. It was the same one. Yeah, I talked to Kalisha recently, and she's in training. She's been training for several months now. She wanted to get at least one fight. This is what she told me, that she wanted to get at least one fight before she goes after the big names.
Mm. So let's see what happens. I mean, let's see what happens. Let's see what this promotional company does, Blueprint Boxing Promotions out of the Bay Area. You know, let's see if they could put some fights together like Brian Mensing. You know, it is a little bit of work to find opponents for female fighters. So let's see how easy it is for this new promotional company, Blueprint Boxing Promotions, with their new signings of Kalisha West and Melissa McGraw. Listeners, you want to give us a call and give us your take on these different subjects, 347-215-7598, here on the 2-Minute Round on the Leave It in the Ring Network, your hooks and jabs look on the female fight world with your host, David Avila, and myself, Felipe Leon. Now, there's a rumor that Cines Estrada's next opponent for her June 3rd scheduled bout on the Golden Boy series at the Belasco Theater will be Laredo, Texas's Christina Fuentes. That fight is set up for June 3rd in downtown L.A. Kind of a big news somewhat that Golden Boy is considering putting on a female fight on their weekly series there. You've been there from the start, David. You know, it's not the first time that Golden Boy has featured a female fighter. Actually, Kalisha West fought on one of their cards and actually captured her WBO bantamweight title on a Golden Boy card way back when Canelo fought Carlos Baldomir and Shane Mosley. Yeah, and Shane Mosley 6 years ago, and Shane Mosley fought Sergio Mora. Do you remember, other than that fight, any other fight card that Golden Boy has featured a female fighter?
Oh yeah, many, many. They had Belinda Cooper fighting Selena Salazar on the card. They had Selena Salazar fighting Anna Gillotin on the card. They had Sunisa Estrada on a Fantasy Springs card when she fought the girl from San Bernardino. I forget her name.
So that was
but she did fight her.
So that was a couple years ago, but they haven't since then. You know, any thoughts of why they have actually moved away from actually featuring some female fighters on their cards?
Well, last year they tried, they were going to have Melinda Cooper fighting for the title, WBO title, against Carolina Arias from Costa Rica, but they ran into visa troubles, and then there was backups that they were hoping to put just in case, and all the backups fell through. They were all overweight. Everybody weighed 135, 140 when the fight was set for 118. And Melinda Cooper's trainer said, no way, well, am I going to allow her to fight somebody at 135 or 140? So they just had to scuttle the fight.
Well, that fight that you mentioned.
Last June.
Yeah. That fight that you mentioned between Cines Estrada and Blanca Raimundo, the fighter from San Bernardino at the Fantasy Springs Casino, was back in 2011. So
maybe
around 2010, 2011, 2012, they were really, you know, gung-ho about the female fighters, and then for whatever reason it fell off the table. And I mean, recent memory, I can't remember the last time. I mean, I was at the Kalisha West fight in 2010. But after, other than that, I can't remember of another. And then after 2011, 2012, I can't remember of another fight that female fight that Golden Boy has put on any of their cards. So
it's been a while. It's been a while.
Yeah. Good news that they are bringing it back on June 3rd and with Cines Estrada. Obviously, Cines Estrada from the L.A. region, so it's a good choice. It's a smart choice for Golden Boy because obviously she'll be able to sell some tickets there for the Velasco Theater. As far as Cristina Fuentes, she's 4 wins, 7 losses, 5 draws. No knockouts, 24 years old. She has experience with wins over Maria Ruiz and Mayela Perez from Mexico, among others. She has also faced Chantal Cordova, Heather Hardy, Tarisha Douglas, and has a draw against Eileen Olszewski. Her last fight was a no contest versus Patty Alcivar in August of 2015. I think it's a pretty good test for Cines Estrada. We saw her maybe slightly struggle in her last fight against Selena Lopez. You know, she won it with 60-54 three times, but Selena was able to put her hands a little bit on her and give her a black eye on the undercard of the Triple G versus Dominic Wade fight back on April 23rd. And I think that this Cristina Fuentes might be a little bit tougher than Selena Lopez, so I think she's going to give her a pretty good fight and have her gain some experience.
Yeah, it's going to be a very good fight for Cenita Estrada. The one good thing is that the place is not a big place, so that place is going to be packed. That fight card will be at the Velasco Theater. When is it? June 3rd? It's
June
3rd. For another big fight
By
Golden Boy at the StubHub.
The Orlando Toledo, Francisco Vargas versus Orlando Toledo WBC Super Featherweight title fight. Any word on who's going to be the main event on that June 3rd at the Velasco?
I did see one name. I can't remember exactly who it was. I can't really remember who the main event was.
Now, going to Mexico City, and this past Tuesday, every Tuesday, the WBC has this press conference that they hold at their office in Mexico City, and Mariana Juarez was present at that press conference. Mariana Juarez, the WBC International Super Flyweight Champion, but she announced that she will be moving up to bantamweight, looking to become the first Mexican female fighter to capture titles in three divisions. She has been a world champion at flyweight and super flyweight. So she announced at that press conference that she will be moving up to bantamweight. And you mentioned it while we talked about her fight result over the Japanese Tamao Ozawa, that you didn't see that she had much power at super flyweight, but I can only imagine that she's not going to have all that much power at bantamweight either, especially at her age, 36.
Well, you know, it's funny, but when Mariana used to train in Southern California, she used to train, you know, at a heavier weight with bigger girls. Mm-hmm. And most of the girls would tell me, and I wouldn't even ask them, but they would tell me that she hits really hard. Even Mia St. John used to spar with her, and she would say Mariana hits really hard for her size. And that was the one comment that they would all make. And, of course, when she was sparring at a heavier weight. So I think the weight does kind of affect her. The lighter she gets, she might not pack as much power just because she's so dehydrated and drained. But that's just my opinion. I'm not really sure. Now, maybe we should ask Mariana.
Yeah, maybe we could try to have her on in the next couple of shows. But, I mean, looking at her record, she has not scored a knockout or a TKO since 2011.
Exactly.
She's
been a while.
And it was at flyweight. Other than that, she's won every, split decisions, unanimous decisions. She's lost by TKO back in 2013 against Ryo Togo. And then she lost again by split decision in 2015 against Naoko Fujioka. But she has not won by knockout since 2011. She has a record of 43 wins, 8 losses, 4 draws, and 17 knockouts. Now, at the press conference, Marisa Suleiman mentioned that Catherine Fitti, the champion at the weight class, had a scheduled rematch with Jasmine Rivas. But now that Jasmine Rivas suffered that cut that we spoke of earlier, it kind of leaves the door open for Mariana Barbie Juarez to be ranked somewhere high. He did not mention any rankings. He didn't mention, you know, he was a little bit of a politician saying that he would have to look at the division and see where Mariana fits in it. But being that she's a former WBC world champion, she does enjoy some rights and some considerations, and that he was going to take that into account. You know, what I believe, what was the most obvious choice was for her to face the super flyweight champion, Zulina La Loba Munoz. But for whatever reason, that fight has never materialized. I mean, they were in talks two or three months ago, and it never materialized because of the money issues. I think that both of them were looking to be the A side of the equation, and obviously somebody has to take a step back. In my opinion, it should have been Mariana Juarez, even though she's a bigger name, but Zulina is the champion who has defended that title numerous times. And Mariana doesn't mention her in that press conference, but did say that they had been working hard in trying to get an opportunity to face for the super flyweight title, but it was just not giving it to her. And when she made that statement, I kind of felt like she was kind of throwing a little dig at the WBC. So by her moving up to bantamweight, let's see what happens. She did mention that her next fight, which should be in the next 2 or 3 months, because she does keep pretty active, will be at the bantamweight division.
That's going to be very interesting. I actually think she's going to do better as a bantamweight. I really do. I remember when she used to fight at bantamweight and super bantamweight, and I always thought she was just a stronger fighter. We'll see. When she got pregnant and had a kid, then she dropped down to flyweight, which was unusual, which I thought was unusual. And from pregnancy to 112, I was like, wow, how did she do it?
Mm-hmm. Well, what I saw from Kathleen Fury, David, is she's a very strong fighter, very quick fighter. And if they were to face each other tomorrow, which is not going to happen, obviously, I would imagine that Mariana would want a couple fights at that weight class to, you know, to acclimate herself to the weight. But Catherine Fury would be a very tough fighter to be defeated by Mariana Barry Juarez, in my opinion.
Yeah, she is very good. She is a very good fighter. She's a very good athlete. That's what I see. She's a very good athlete. She has some skills. But sometimes, you know, it takes a very skillful fighter like Mariana to break down an athlete, Catherine Fury. They just know how to lure you in and set you up for traps, and all of a sudden you're in a different world. Your athleticism doesn't mean a lot. It might be one of those kind of fights where, you know, her experience might tell on the athletic theory.
Good point. Now, the next news, WBC strawweight champion Yuko Kuroki of Japan will defend her title against the Philippines' Norge Guro. Guro is ranked number 10, and the fight will be on June 6th in Tokyo. Kuroki, who holds a title, of 15-4 with one draw, seven knockouts, last defended in December with the unanimous decision over Mexican Nancy Franco, while Guro, with a record of 7 wins, 5 losses, one draw, 4 knockouts, is coming 2 straight losses, 2 unanimous decision losses to one Naoe Ikayama and Jessica Kika Chavez. This last one in April of 2015, her last fight. Her last win was back in March of 2014 with the unanimous decision in a 4-rounder over the 0-1 Rosemary Cruz in the Philippines. So on paper, David, this Filipino Norge Guro, to me, doesn't deserve to be fighting for the WBC strawweight title.
Yeah, it's just one of those fights. I guess they're trying to keep the champion busy, and, you know, they rank this girl high. It might be a political thing. And the Japanese are really, really roaring down at the lower weight classes, the strawweights, and many minimum weight fights. It's, they're doing a lot of damage over there.
Yeah, they do, but the considered number one strawweight in the world is actually a Mexican, Aníbal La Vispa Ortiz. So, you know, a very good fighter, a very tough fighter who has defended her title numerous times. But what I want to see is, this Yuko Kuroki has not faced her, and it would be you know, a great fight. It would be a unification fight, WBC against WBA. So I don't know if that's something that would be in the works, if that's something that they would be looking to do. I don't know if they have ever been contacted, both camps have ever contacted each other, but I think that's a fight that should be made. And I think, if I remember correctly, at the female fight convention this past January here in Tijuana, this Japanese fighter was in attendance, and I think they did have a little bit of a talk that maybe it would be something that they would want to do, but obviously nothing set in stone.
Yeah, that's one of those things where it comes to money. Can you offer enough money to come to Mexico or vice versa? It's just about the money.
Yeah, and I think it might be something viable because Anabel Avispa Ortiz is signed with quite possibly the biggest Latin American promoter, frankly the biggest Mexican promoter out there, if not the Latin American promoter in Sanfer. So it's just a matter of if they are willing to invest in their 105-pound champion. I have heard rumors that she is looking to move up from 105 to junior flyweight 108. So it might be something that they might not want to do because she might not be staying at the division for much too long. So maybe that is the reason as well of why the fight has not been tried to made or has not been made.
Yeah, I can see that too. That's very, very, very possible.
And lastly, for the female fight chatter section of the two-minute round here on the Leave It in the Ring Network, in a recent interview, WBC flyweight champion Jessica Kika Chavez stated her next fight might be a defense against none other than Ava Knight. She said the contract is in talks and she is ready to face her. Chavez also mentioned she is willing to face Yvette La Roca Zamora in a rematch. They actually fought some time ago where Kika Chavez was challenging La Roca Zamora for her title, and La Roca Zamora was able to defend it successfully. Then Kika Chavez actually ended up moving up in weight. That was back in November of 2014 after she lost to La Ibera Roca Zamora at 108. She moved back to flyweight and captured the WBC title there in 2015. But Roca Zamora has mentioned that she wants to go up to flyweight now, that she wants to leave the junior flyweight division and wants to move up to flyweight, and she wants a direct shot at the champion, who is Kika Chavez, at the convention. I keep mentioning the convention, but a lot of things happened there. Mauricio Suleiman mentioned that he was interested in organizing a flyweight tournament, which would include not only Kika Chavez and Ibesa Roca Zamora, but also Ava Knight, Melissa McMorro, and Raja Amache from Germany. So we have not heard any talks of that since then. And now that they're looking to make the Kika Chavez against Ava Knight out of the tournament, well, I guess the promoters are taking the matters into their own hand. Actually, Ava Knight and Jessica Kika Chavez are under the same banner, which is Promociones del Pueblo, a Mexican fight promoter out of Ciudad Juarez, Mexico.
Well, that's going to be a good fight. I saw Ava Knight a couple of weeks ago at the Canelo fight. She was in Vegas, and she was actually there for the Nevada Hall of Fame fundraiser. And she looked in good shape. She had just fought her fight a week earlier, and which she won. And she looked in pretty good shape.
Yeah, but one thing that people have noticed and have they said, and they actually asked Kika Chavez in that interview, is that if she feels that Ava Knight has declined a bit since she first came to Mexico, where she knocked out, you know, a number of fighters. She beat Barbie Juarez. She knocked out Arely Muncino, who was the flyweight champion at that point. And in her last two fights in Mexico, she had a draw against Jacez Noriega, and then she went the distance with Judas Rodriguez in that fight that you mentioned that happened last month. And quite honestly, a lot of people have stated that she doesn't look like the same Ava Knight. Kika Chavez was asked that, and she said no, that she feels that Ava Knight is still the same fighter that she was during that time, and that she feels that it is going to be a tough fight. What are your thoughts on that, David?
Yeah, she might just be shaking out the rust. And because she was away for a little while, and it that because the first fight that she fought this year, she didn't look as on point. But the last fight, you could see she looked a little more comfortable. And after about the third or fourth round, then she really started getting a groove. And you could see the old Ava Knight. So it might be a tough fight with Jessica Chavez, who's always on point. She is always on point. So that's going to be a very good fight.
Yes, I do agree with you on there. And now that we have come to the conclusion of our female fight chatter. Now we're moving to the last section of here, the two-minute round, Hooks and Jabs Look on the Female Fight World on the Leave It in the Ring Network. If you want to give us a call and talk some female boxing, the number is 347-215-7598. Again, 347-215-7598. Not a lot of action coming up, David. Starting off on Friday, May 20th, from Caucasia, Colombia, we have Dayana Cordero facing Maribel Ramirez for the interim WBA bantamweight title. So that might be some future opponents for Mariana Juarez once she moves up to the bantamweight division. And on Saturday, May 21st, in Richmond, California, near the Bay Area, we have super flyweight Casey Morton facing Peggy Mars of Canada in what is being reported on BoxRec as a five-rounder and actually a flyweight. So she's actually going down to flyweight. So that's kind of strange that they are going to be having it if they do have a five-rounder.
It is. That's kind of unusual. But, you know, I've seen it happen before, and it actually, I guess what it means is that it's going to be a close fight, so they want a winner.
You know, and that's and this Peggy Mars is the same fighter that I mentioned that we mentioned in the last show that she faced Paola Estrada out here in the Inland Empire, and that they originally wanted to fight a six rounder, but the commission didn't allow it, so they allowed them four rounds of 3 minute rounds. So that might be another reason too, that maybe they didn't allow her to go six rounds, but they're willing to let her go five rounds in 2 minute rounds.
Yeah, it's very unusual.
I think that she's up in age, so maybe the commission is trying to be a little bit careful, the California commission. She's up in age, so they might not want her to go that many rounds.
Oh, I see. Yeah, they just recently allowed a 50-year-old, no, actually 60-year-old woman to fight in Los Angeles downtown about 2 months ago. And I thought that was unusual.
Wow. Who did she fight?
It was a heavyweight. She fought a former champion, and I mean, she didn't do bad for a 60-year-old woman. She did very well, but she ended up getting knocked out in the third round, and then I think the commission said, "You're done. No more fighting for you."
Oh, wow. Now, on Wednesday, May 25th, in Beijing, China, Zhong Yu Kai will face Samson Tor Buamas for the vacant IBF Intercontinental Strawweight title. Whereas in Friday, May 27th, we have Maiva Hamadouche versus Anise Pacheco for the vacant WBC silver lightweight title. And in Mexico City that same night, Estrella Valverde will face Belen Gonzalez for the Mexican super flyweight title. And lastly, on Saturday, May 28th, we have in Marne, France, Anne-Sophie Da Costa versus Soledad Macedo for the WBF junior flyweight title. And in Acapulco, Mexico, Mariana Barbie's sister, Lourdes La Pequeña Lulu Juarez, will be facing Suri Tapia. It was not reported how many rounds they're going to go, but since our last conversation about Lourdes Juarez, it's probably going to be a four-rounder.
Oh, wow. They still haven't stepped up yet. Well,
they haven't reported
it,
but it looks like it might be a four-rounder. You're right.
Okay.
Right,
David,
over there. Excuse
me.
Are you okay over there? In your neck of the woods?
I just had an ambulance. I'm in downtown LA. You know.
Alrighty. Well, with that, we have reached the end, David, of another edition, the number fifth edition of the 2 minute round. Your Hooks and Jabs Look on the Female Fight World here on the Leave It in the Ring Network. Before we go, let me give you a quick rundown. What else you can find on the Leave It in the Ring Network. On Monday nights, we have the next round with Steve Kim and Gabriel Montoya at 4 p.m. Pacific time, where they take your calls and go over the last week's boxing action. On Tuesdays, you have In the Square Circle with myself, Felipe Leon, where I give you a 30-minute or less recap of what went down the last previous week with news, fight results, and the upcoming calendar. On Wednesdays, we have the flagship show, Leave It in the Ring, with Gabriel Montoya and David Duenas. And then every other Thursday, you have a two-minute round. This show, Boxing Jabs Look on the Female Fight World, with co-host David Avila, Elena Baby Doll Reed, and myself. And we're looking for the return of the technical draw with Lenny the Fight Smith, which is an in-depth interview. I don't know if you had the chance to listen to the first one, the only one, David, where Lenny the Fight, it was probably about a month and a half ago or 2 months, where Lenny the Fight Smith went literally toe-to-toe with Lou DiBella.
No, I haven't been able to listen to
yeah.
that.
I'm going to find the link and I'm going to send it to you because you got to listen to it. It's great. It's great. And I believe Lenny the Fight Smith is looking for his next victim, guest, but that's what it's going to be coming up. So with that said, we thank everybody that has listened live or is going to listen on the podcast, and we'll be here on our next show in 2 weeks. When is 2 weeks? What day is that, David? I don't have it in front of me. Do you know?
It will be June 2nd.
Just before the Cenizas Estrada. Rumored her opponent will be this Texan girl, Christina Fuentes. It's not set in stone, so let's see if that does transpire. Let's see if we can get a little bit more research on that concussion thing with the Baby Doll Reed, and then we'll see if we could have some other interviews. Let's see who could get on the horn and talk some female boxing. So thank you, David. Thank you, Elena Baby Doll Reed, and thank you, our listeners. Have a good night.
Good evening.